This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, August the 10th, 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending August the 10th, 2012, which this week have been edited by Irene Dowding and Bill Argles. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And now let's get on with this week's announcements, and we will begin as usual with What's On. Gardens are obviously a big attraction at the moment, and Open Gardens, the National Gardens Scheme, on Sunday and Wednesday, August the 12th and the 22nd, Dean House, Kilminston. There's 9 acres, including a walled garden, with 135 different varieties of vegetables, 1,600 documented individual plant species and cultivars. And that's, again, on August the 12th and 22nd. The timings are Sunday, 12 noon until 5pm, and Wednesday, 10am to 4pm. Admission is £5, and there will be plants for sale, and you can have a cup of tea there. On Wednesday, the 15th of August, Berry Cottage, Church Road, Farringdon, near Alton, is a small organic cottage garden with all-year interest, including herbaceous borders, a pond and a bog. There is a water garden charity today. A water garden charity day, and that's on Sunday, September the 2nd. It's the John Lewis Partnership will be opening the Longstock Park Water Garden in aid of No Limits. No Limits is an award-winning Southampton-based charity which offers free and confidential information, support and advice to young people under 26 years old across Hampshire. The Water Garden, forming part of 3,750-acre Leckford Estate, will open from 2 till 5pm with refreshments available. And the park nursery will also be open from 11 till 5. Admission charges are £5 for adults and £1 for children. No dogs are allowed in the water garden apart from assistance dogs. Then there will be a family fun day at the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum, Peninsula Barracks, Romsey Road, Winchester. It's on Wednesday, the 15th of August, 2012. From 10am until 4pm. You can go and learn about soldiers of the past with 95th Sharp and WW1 riflemen, dress up in military uniforms plus face painting, colouring competition and quizzes. For information about that, please ring 01962 828 549. And so for the Royal Green Jackets Family Fun Day, the number is 01962 828 549. And finally, a reading by the poet laureate. Carol Ann Duffy will be at Beedale School near Petersfield, and she will be giving a reading on Tuesday, September the 18th at 8pm. As we all know, she is one of the most acclaimed modern poets. Miss Duffy will speak for an hour, accompanied by musician John Sampson. There will be a book signing afterwards. Tickets are £14 or £12 for concessions. The box office can be contacted on 01730 711 511. And again, that number is 01730 711 511. And that completes our announcements of what's on for this week. And the lighting up times end on Friday, 10th of August at 5:46 a.m. and begins at 8:36 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 14th of August, it ends at 5:53 a.m. and begins at 8:27 p.m. Oh dear, the evenings are already drawing in. Now, if you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's Lynn Parker again on 01962 862 826. And of course, if you prefer not to listen to any particular item on the recording, you just need to skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. The main headlines this week are on the Games Way Walk, Golden Times for County Athletes, and Aldi to build a new store at last. And we'll have Claire, please, to read the first news headline story,
which is entitled On the Games Way Walk. Winchester Cathedral served as the starting line for the seventh leg of a 187-mile trek to the Olympic Stadium. The Games Way Walk, in celebration of the London 2012 Olympics, passed through Winchester last Friday from Weymouth en route to London. One of the participants, Jenny Obie, who's 50, an auditor of Hyde Abbey Road, said, "I really wanted to feel that I was taking part in some way. It's not just the fitness and walking, but this leaves a legacy of a permanent footpath for years to come. And of course, you can't beat the Hampshire countryside." The walk is the brainchild of Mark Stanley, who's 42, a project manager from Reading. Mr. Stanley said, "There was a lot of cynicism when the Olympic bid was won. I came up with this walk as a way that non-athletes could celebrate and get involved in a way that's still active. The walk will now become an established footpath and leave a permanent legacy. Walkers can join in and complete as many or as few of the stages of the walk as they wish. The final stage is 17 miles from Putney Bridge to Stratford." Jan Howell, who's 65, of Alsford Road, Winchester, opted for two stages. She said, "We walked 14 miles yesterday and we'll walk 10 miles today. We started from Romsey yesterday and today we'll finish at Bishop Sutton." And there's a picture of a lovely smiling group getting ready outside Winchester Cathedral.
Golden Times for County Athletes. Olympic glory beckoned for several Hampshire athletes last weekend. Cyclist Danny King and sailor Ben Ainslie achieved their dreams by securing gold medals at the London Games. Former Barton Peveril College student Danny, 21, and fellow riders Joanne Rousel and Laura Trott were crowned champions of the women's cycling team pursuit, one of six gold medals won by Team GB on Saturday.
Aldi to build new store, at last. Aldi has announced it is finally due to start work building its new store in Winchester, just a few weeks before the diggers move in. The cut price supermarket says it will begin work in September and open next spring, nearly 4 years after winning planning permission. It won approval in 2009 after an appeal overturned a City Council planning committee. The site next to Waitrose, the former Chimneys pub off Burnett Close, was cleared, but no work was done, sparking complaints from neighbours saying it was an eyesore. Local people say the inactivity and lack of consultation shows contempt for local opinion. Brian Wareham of Burnett Close said on Wednesday, "Although I think it's the wrong building in the wrong place, we are pleased something is going to happen, 6 years on after the first application. As for how Aldi have treated the community, I could add strong words, but I won't. They've not considered the sensitivity of community feeling. It does not bode well for the future. I've seen a lot of Aldis and they're untidy and neglected. The architect's drawings will not be the reality. When Waitrose came along, there were leaflets through the doors. The site manager sent out newsletters. Aldi have a totally different attitude. They are invisible." Their decision to build was made some time ago. There's been no consultation, no communication. Where are they going to put their vehicles and porter cabins? The first we would have known was when they turn up next month. Growth from plants on the Aldi site recently swamped a footpath nearby, although it has now been cleared. Mr. Wareham said Aldi had been poor neighbours. The hedge spread across the path. We've had to complain about that constantly. The site is unkempt. It looks a mess. Aldi makes no effort to make it look tidy. It's an uncaring attitude. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Ryan recently wrote to senior Aldi managers, urging them to get on with the scheme. Mr. Bryan said, Aldi wanted permission to build this store so badly they were prepared to go to the planning inspector and overturn the democratically taken local decision, which actually turned down their original application. It's now 3 years later and a spade hasn't touched the ground. I also wrote to Messrs. Barnes and Heine, group managing directors, a year ago to inquire as to their intentions, and was told the company was currently reviewing the store opening strategy for the southern region. I've nothing against Aldi being in the city. Indeed, I think they will be very welcome and be a welcome competition for the big three. But it should not take an MP chasing them in order to get a start date. In a statement, Aldi said, "We are delighted to announce the construction of the Aldi Winchester store will commence in September 2012, and we look forward to welcoming our new customers in the spring of 2013.
Thank you, Jerry. And those were the headline stories. And we'll now get along with death notices and then Christian comment. And those will be followed, as usual, by the letters to the editors, historical items, your say, and chronicle comment and first person. And we'll begin now with the death notices. Atkin Donald, peacefully, 3rd of August. Born Janet Jan, peacefully, 1st of August, 877. Clark Harry Ronald Ron, late of the Shoe Inn, Exton, peacefully, 6th of August, age 91. Dudley Anthony Carl Tony, at home on the 2nd of August. Fulick, Mariah Jane, née Pannell, suddenly, 28th of July, age 45. Gearing, David, Dave, 1st of August, aged 87. Kurzweil, Bernard Waldron, late of Marwell, peacefully, 31st of July, aged 80. Maidment, George, 27th of July, age 78. Wakely, Christopher Mark, peacefully, 29th of July. Gilman, Elizabeth Ann, peacefully, 1st of August, age 82. Hughes, Pat, suddenly at home, 26th of July. Curler, Beatrice Lilly, 25th of July, aged 100. Munger, Catherine, Kath, peacefully at home, 4th of August, age 85. Shepherd, Daphne Margaret, peacefully at home, 3rd of August. And now we're going to ask Claire, please, to read Christian comment.
This is entitled, Take a Holiday from the Internet. It's holiday season again, and for many, engaging with Olympic excitement is holiday enough. For others, austerity means that holiday is out of the question. One thing society does not want to engage with is to take a break from internet, iPod, iPad, BlackBerry, texting. In fact, the whole universe of www. keeps us in thrall, even on holiday. Suppose for a few weeks that those letters WWW meant something different, something attractive for those who go away, as well as for those who stay. The first W might mean walking or wandering. the invitation to explore pastures new, trekking across hills or meandering by a stream, or even remembering such walks and what they meant to us. The second W could be wondering, contemplating what we discover, or rediscovering familiar sights with new eyes. This is what Christians have engaged with for centuries when walking on pilgrimages to sacred sites. Today, pilgrims to Chartres Cathedral in France still walk the 70 miles from Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, in a dynamic spirit as a reaction to the materialism of our times. Fellowship along the road, openness to journey companions and simplicity are all part of this. Gospel memories of Jesus telling his followers to travel simply and accept village hospitality come to mind. In Spain, thousands of Christians from the road take the road to the shrine of St. James at Compostela. Wandering, and sore feet are an integral part of this. Closer to home, our Celtic ancestors leave us pre-Christian memories of their sacred sites, such as Stonehenge and Avebury Ring. Christian saints of this country walked miles across the Northumbrian hills or South Downs, bringing the gospel to outlying pagan villages. Here in Winchester, pilgrims to Canterbury Cathedral, to the shrine of Thomas à Becket, followed an ancient way, even a pre-Christian way, across the Downs from Winchester. The motivation for this was repentance, originally for the crime of murder, later for more personal reasons. And this wandering will lead easily to worship, to thanksgiving for what is being rediscovered. This leads to the third W, wisdom, which is where wandering and wondering lead. T.S. Eliot wrote in Little Gidding that the end of exploration would be to arrive home and know the place for the first time. This is the wisdom of reimagining our deepest values, what we hold most precious. Maybe facing the issue of addictions is part of this. Does being online incessantly block out our deeper relationships? In reordering our priorities, we recognise what we really desire. That would genuinely coming home to wisdom. And that's written by Mary Gray.
Thank you, Claire. And now we come on to letters to the editor. We have 9 this week, and we're going to start with Robin, please.
Shops should tell their own story. And it's from Roger Farrell of Hairstock, Winchester. On Sunday, my wife and I were enjoying an excellent lunch in the Bangkok Brasserie. With the added pleasure of a window seat, we could indulge in people-watching and were entertained by the variety of human race in shape, size, demeanour and dress sense. The sun was shining and Winchester was buzzing with the added interest of the Olympic screens in the Cathedral Close. We also noticed that the restaurant opposite had a doorstep inscribed with the words King and Co. We vaguely remembered that there used to be a classy grocer's shop near there, but could not recall if this was it. It struck me that it would be interesting, both to locals and the more curious tourist, if a discreet card were posted in the window giving some record of the previous uses of the building, including a photo of how it looked 100 years ago. I have a dim memory that either the City Museum or the County Recreation Service have already done a display on the theme of the history of Jury Street, and thus the information is already collated. I guess that the archives of the Hampshire Chronicle would have something to add to that process. I imagine also that most proprietors of businesses would welcome potential customers looking at their windows for a few moments longer. There is a project here that would add value to Winchester at very little cost, especially if the property owners concerned could see the benefit of a little gentle sponsorship. I can't imagine that this is an unique idea, but if it works for Jury Street, where else? Roger Farrell, Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Another letter concerning the shops in Winchester comes from Rosemary Poole. Mr. Halliwell's letter, August the 2nd, encouraged me to count the empty shops in Winchester High Street. At the present time, there are 8, and of course there are others in the Brooks and some of the side streets. I don't know who owns these properties, but if these vacancies are due to high rents, surely a lower rent would be better than no rent at all. I feel that some of the high street vacancies are caused by out-of-town supermarkets, who, apart from selling food and drink and the usual household materials, now sell clothes, jewellery, kitchenware, tableware, toiletries, stationery, DVDs, CDs, toys and books, as well as having in-store chemists, dry cleaners and cobblers, and, of course, the inevitable cafe. I'm guilty myself of buying high street goods in supermarkets, and only last week purchased a Coir doormat from one of them. I'd much rather have bought it from our lovely local hardware store, but it was raining and the car was there. Coupled with the trend to buy things online, I feel the change in the character of our high streets is sadly inevitable. Rosemary Poole, St James Villas, Winchester.
This letter from Louise Musselwhite is headed, excuse me, Mystery Solved. Sir, reading last week's edition, I saw the article about the past businesses in City Road, namely the old Town and Country Building Society, which was uncovered when being renovated. Belgarum couldn't remember the name of the ladies' clothes shop that used to be there, but although I'm only in my mid-40s, I recall it being called Clemo's, which catered for the more mature lady. I clearly remember walking past with my friends when we were probably in our early teens and laughing at the awful styles they had, and even more amazing was that it was open for so long. I hope this clears up the question. Louise Musselwhite, Cranberry Close, Otterbourne, and just underneath as editor's note, see Belgarum next week for more on the mystery.
This letter from John Gallienne of Alsford has the title Cutters Return to Devastate Flowers. I had no intention of revisiting the Lady Croft roundabout saga, but out of respect for the people who rang me or stopped me in the street to thank me for my efforts, I feel I must write again. Following the desecration of the cowslips again this year, the roundabout was left to grow wild with grasses, cornflowers, poppies, and numerous others, maybe even an orchid. It had the appearance of a wildflower meadow and was a joy to see. Following a spell out of the area and venturing out, I was horrified to see the roundabout, adjoining central reservation and grass verges, had been cut down to lawn level. Two recent articles in your paper from members of HCC extolling the virtues of verge cutting stated that biennial cuts take place in April and September, depending on whether this avoids damaging wild flowers, etc. As I write, July is only just over, so why did this damaging cut take place? Strangely, no other cutting happened. No verges, central reservations or crossroads, i.e. viewing lines. So why pick on Ladycroft? Anyone knows that wildflower meadows are cut in September, or just after, not in July. Even the Percy Hobbs roundabout, sometime recently, only had a 2-metre cut carried out, and although it carries some wild grasses and flowers, it is not as attractive as Ladycroft. I had communication from Councillor Jackie Porter recently, saying it was hoped a meeting may take place this year with a view not to cut roundabouts in the future. Roll on that day. Did some unknown person decide it needed cutting down to make it look pretty to possible visitors attending the Olympics and visiting Alsford on their journey? Anyone who admires wild grasses and flowers and is concerned with the slipshod cutting can email jackie.porter@hants.gov.uk or peter.ead@hants.gov.uk. While Mr. Ead is not responsible for wildflowers, I believe he is in charge of verge cutting. I've heard from no organisations in Alsford in protection of our countryside, so presume there is none. John Gallienne, Perrins Close, Alsford.
Time running out for cornerways. And this letter comes from Lynn S. Casson. May I appeal through your newspaper to everyone who has ever had family members or friends resident at Cornerways Care Home in Kingsworthy to consider what will be lost if this home is closed. Cornerways has run under capacity for some time because it has been County Council policy not to accept new residents, only those for short stay or respite care. It is not due to lack of need. To my knowledge, promises of refurbishment have been going on for at least 2 years. There are prospective users, for example those with dementia who do not need large rooms for equipment or wide corridors to walk in. Nationally, our future needs for the elderly will be biased towards mental illnesses. Cornerways is built with a simple layout and small comfortable rooms with areas for people to gather and to eat. Money to update bathrooms, buy a new boiler and make rooms meet fire building requirements where necessary cannot surely be more than that needed to finance all other schemes proposed, telecare and care in the community, etc. The only other Hampshire County Council care home in Winchester is much larger, but has corridors of the same width and rooms the same size as Cornerways. However, because of large numbers, care cannot be of the same homely type offered at Cornerways. The council will be making a big mistake if it closes this well-run home with its caring staff. The deadline for response to this public consultation is August the 20th. Lynn S. Casson, Litcham Road, Marlham, Norfolk.
Spend it here. Sir, I was so pleased to read that Councillor Thornborough had £307 million in reserve, Hampshire Chronicle, July 26. May I suggest he spend some of it to resurface the roads on the forgotten Week estate? Since I came to live here some 30-plus years ago, it has never been done. R. Harrison, Chairman, Week Tenants and Residents Association, Trussell Crescent, Week.
And the letter entitled What Will We Tell Our Grandchildren is from Malcolm Wright, a Winchester City Councillor. Letters in the August the 2nd issue prove climate change alarmists are dogmatic hypocrites by implying I only use unfounded and one-sided information. They seem to think the Royal Society are just sceptics and refuse to even listen to them. I believe, as do now the Royal Society, that population increase is a far greater problem and the major cause of climate change, not global warming, due to deforestation and bad land management, and that all resources should be conserved, not just energy. Sadly, this is a subject politicians do not wish to tackle. The obscene amounts of money being wasted on green energy would be better spent on research to save all resources. We need to learn how to make all products out of 100% recycled material, and this will need money. I wonder what the climate change alarmists are going to say to their grandchildren in the future when they are asked three questions. Why did you spend all that money on useless wind generators and not on saving resources, so I could enjoy the same standard of living as you? And why, because of overpopulation, did you do nothing to stop tens of thousands of species being lost through deforestation and bad land management? Why am I always hungry? Are you going to tell them you refuse to even look at data and research put forward by sensible people / organisations, and instead dismiss them as just sceptics? Malcolm Wright, Winchester City Councillor, South Wanston.
This letter from Elizabeth Thorne is headed, "We act as if there was no tomorrow." Sir, very recent correspondence on climate change, I feel that Bob Whitmarsh's scary truth may not go far enough. As Keith's story says about world overpopulation, wars already take place because of competition for resources. This will worsen as Earth's scarce water, land, minerals, food, etc., come under increasing pressure everywhere. We are not only using and wasting far too much energy, but also everything else. We must reduce consumption. We act as if there was no tomorrow, which I don't think there will be, not for civilization and nature anyway. Anyone who can't see this is either ignorant or barking mad. The Earth will look after itself, as it always has, with or without us. To continue as we are, with such emphasis on economic growth, is a recipe for disaster, one it is too late to avert. If population growth could have been limited over the past 50 years, the problems would now be much less. People go on producing children as if the world, as we know it, is going to go on forever. It won't. Future generations will have to deal not only with more bloody wars, but immigration from poor countries in such numbers it will be impossible to prevent. I, for one, am glad I decided to have no offspring. Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And this letter, entitled Breath of Fresh Air, comes from Bob Thompson. Chris Polach, in letters August the 2nd, asked, "Is it just me who is bored about global warming?" No, it is not just you. I'm not sure about the real effects, but I too am filled with a desire to jump off Beachy Head every time I see these letters. I buy the Chronicle for many reasons, but the biggest is to read the entertaining letters from the more eccentric members of our community. It is a breath of fresh air to hear your opinions. I only wish I'd done it first. Bob Thompson, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, and that's our letters for this week. And the next item, of course, is historical items. And this week I get to read 200 years ago, 1812. There are two items. A meeting took place in New Palace Yard of the Householders of Westminster to consider a petition for a reform in the representation of the people and for redress of grievances. Major Cartwright inveighed against the corruption that still continued and recommended a perseverance in applying to the House of Commons for a reform as the only place to which people could, with any probability of success, lay open their grievances. The next item, Wednesday. Benjamin Renshaw suffered the sentence of the law on the gallows near Nottingham for setting fire to a stack belonging to Mr. Charles Stanton and slaughtering a ram, property of Mr. Isaac de Daly, both of Mansfield. About 11, he was placed in a cart with the executioner and a respectable gentleman who had daily visited him during his condemnation. The concourse of spectators was unusually great to witness the awful catastrophe.
100 years ago, 1912. A pleasing event took place yesterday at the sitting of the city magistrates when Miss Alice Tucker was presented with the diploma of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, in recognition of her courageous conduct when she firstly remonstrated with and was secondly instrumental in securing the arrest of 3 gypsies who were charged with cruelly ill-treating a pony, the case resulting in the driver being sentenced to 3 months hard labour. As the hour approaches for the swifts to go, they become more and more precious in our eyes, and also more and more interesting in their ways. Our Winchester swifts usually go about August the 11th, and stragglers we see after that date are travellers from the north who pass over and tarry to feed on their way to the coast. The young birds are now out of the nest and strong on the wing.
50 years ago, 1962. A dismal morning, followed by afternoon rainstorms, kept people away from a customary bank holiday attraction, the Hursley Hunt Horse Show and Gymkhana, in Broadlands Park, Romsey. A light drizzle merely made things uncomfortable for both riders and judges. And at the beginning of the afternoon programme, spells of sunshine brought promise of an enjoyable afternoon. It was not to be, however, and the show went on without a hitch in rain and shine. Tests with the American idea of semi-automatic parking control starts in Winchester next week at the Central Car Park. The system, well known on the continent and favoured at home by an increasing number of new town developers, is the first of its type to be installed by a local authority in the south. It is a £4,000 scheme, and Winchester City Council are testing it in the hope of greater regulation at the city's largest parking area.
25 years ago, 1987... Members of the Hampshire Council for the Preservation of Rural England heard this week that, in common with other parts of the South East, they have been fully justified in maintaining at public inquiries that householders have greatly exaggerated their claims of a shortage of building land. A report, Land Use for Residential Development in the South East, published by Roger Timm and Partners, shows there is no real problem at any stage of the housing supply process. Conservationists have hit out at the decision to allow an oil pipeline through the edge of the New Forest from the Witch Farm oil field to Southampton Water. "We are appalled," said Chairman of the New Forest Association, Mr. Derry Seaton, who added, "It seems the government is prepared to destroy our national heritage for a cupful of oil." Energy Minister, Mr. Cecil Parkinson, ruled in favour of the BP after a 3-week public inquiry.
And those are our historical items, and Claire now will read the Hampshire Chronicle's Vox Pop item, Your Say, please, Claire.
We asked, what has been your favourite moment of the Olympics so far and why? Alex Rose, who's 24, and an assistant manager of Sleepers Hill Winchester said, "I've really enjoyed the cycling because we've been so successful, but I love the diving. I'm not sporty myself, so I haven't been really supporting anyone. I just think well done to all for taking part." Louis Carr, 25, recruitment consultant of Hyde Street, Hyde, said, "It's all been good, like the velodrome, but I really like the basketball between the USA and Argentina. The USA have an all-star team who are doing all sorts of amazing tricks and slam dunks. It was great to watch." And Graham Stockwell, who's 27 and a Hampshire County Council employee of Sheridan Close, Stanmore, said, "It has to be the Saturday night with three medals in 45 minutes, especially the long jump because it was so unexpected. And then Mo Farah finished it off and made it a complete gold rush." And lastly, Vicky Burgess, who's 43 and a carer of Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy, who said, "My favourite moment was seeing the Olympic Stadium from Stratford Shopping Centre when I was up there last Monday. But from watching it, I really have enjoyed the diving and the gymnastic teams."
Thank you. And it's editorial comment now, and the heading for this is, "Keep it quiet, new superstore is coming." Excuse me. Aldi hasn't exactly endeared itself with the people of Winchester, of the suburb, by... I'm going to start again, I'm sorry about that. Aldi hasn't exactly endeared itself with the people of a Winchester suburb by apparently intended or unintended keeping quiet the fact that it is at long last about to begin work on its new store. It wasn't until the Hampshire Chronicle made yet more inquiries this week about what was happening on the long derelict site that it confessed work was due to start next month. Were local people to be greeted by heavy lorries moving in and diggers arriving unannounced? The Cut Price supermarket says it will open next spring, nearly 4 years after winning planning permission. The site next to Waitrose, the former Chimneys pub off Burnett Close, was cleared long ago, but there's been no sign of any work being done, sparking complaints from neighbours saying it was an eyesore. Some local people have now, understandably, raised questions as to what sort of neighbour Aldi will be. On the plus side, Aldi will bring new jobs and more choice for supermarket shoppers across Winchester and beyond. But with three supermarkets about to be in such close proximity, we can only hope that local roads will be able to cope with the influx of more shoppers and delivery lorries.
First person this week is by Khalid Aziz and has the title "Keep Your Eye on the Ball." With all the games fever, it's been interesting to note the winners and losers across the board, and not just amongst the athletes. Biggest loser must have been G4S and their hapless CEO, who, having put in a low ball tender, presumably to shut out other contenders for this prodigious security contract, failed to keep his eye on the ball. Pleading, "I was on holiday when I got the news about the recruitment shortfall," is up there with the former BP boss Tony Haywood saying, "I want my life back," after 11 people had just lost theirs in the oil rig explosion in the Gulf of Mexico. If it's prestige you're after, keep your eye on the ball, as they say in the Olympics. Then there was poor old David Beckham, his dream dashed by not being included in the GB football team, thus robbing it of any real sparkle. Parche, Ryan Giggs. Having watched their first lacklustre game, I resolved to miss the rest. Banning butchers and the like from arranging sausage displays in Olympic rings was bonkers, as was ensuring that there was an army of enforcement officers to police the ban when such scarce resources should have been used to stop little old ladies from being ripped off by cowboy builders. However, officious clipboard wielders have always found it easier to impose new regulations on normally law-abiding citizens who are less likely to thump them for their trouble. Then there were all the empty seats at a host of Olympic events, occasioned by allocated ticket holders' wives. Radio 4 referred to them as spouses, but we all know the reality. Strangely finding the shopping delights of Oxford Street preferable to watching repetitive hours of dressage at Greenwich. As I write, the tabloids have decided there's been backsliding. Cyclist Mark Cavendish was first to disappoint, and even the delightful Lizzie Armitstead's silver was not enough, although she was justifiably over the moon, as they say in athletic circles. Watching her sprint down the Mall to be beaten by the strapping Marianne Vos of the Netherlands, shouldn't there be handicapping as in horse racing? Should inspire the hapless dinner party cyclists in our valley as they wobble home after another evening of over-refreshment. Tom Daly, pin-up boy to young girls and their mothers alike, also failed to meddle. It's become a verb now, but this must stop once the Olympics is over. Our gymnasts got the first bronze in their discipline for 100 years, but the baying crowd could only boo the fact that the Japanese pipped them after a protest, which, duly considered by the judges, boosted their points. Very sporting, I'm sure. The lads themselves knew just how much they'd achieved, even with third prize. Our hopes still lie with the sitting down sports, somehow much more British.
And now we're going to continue with the further items of general news from the Hampshire Chronicle, and we're asking Gerry to start us off, please.
And this one is entitled, I Never Thought I'd See Two London Games. 64 years have passed since London last hosted the greatest sporting event on earth, but for Viv Nixon, the memory of being there is still as strong as ever. The 76-year-old from Romsey is one of the lucky people to have attended two London Olympics. He shared his childhood memories of attending the last day of the 1948 London Games at the old Wembley Stadium, for which he still has the treasured programme and ticket. He said that though the event has moved on in terms of security and scale, the one thing that has not changed is the enthusiasm that echoed around the country during the first post-war games. I think the atmosphere of the people going is just the same, that sense of excitement and enjoyment of it, he said. The spirit of the games is the same. Viv got a ticket thanks to his older brothers, who took him on the day. They were sports fans and had attended Wembley before for football matches and speedway racing. But Viv never dreamed he would get a coveted Olympic ticket. Everybody knew it was a big day, said Viv. The ticket then cost just 3 shillings and 6 pence and had a picture of Big Ben and the Olympic rings. Another thing that was very different was the informality of the stadium. Being only 12, Viv and other youngsters were allowed through the barrier to sit right next to the track and got ringside seats for the action. I was sitting inside the barrier on the grass right next to the outside lane. It's totally unthinkable now, he said. I could have put my foot out and tripped up the runner on the outside lane. It was great. Of the events he watched that day, 3 stuck in Viv's mind as dramatic moments. He saw the end of the men's marathon as Etienne Gailly, a Belgian, who had led the race entering the stadium, was passed by 2 runners, including Great Britain's Tom Richards, who eventually won silver. The Belgian staggered over the line for a bronze. More drama was to follow as the hotly tipped USA 4x100 metres relay team handed the baton outside the changeover area and were disqualified, giving the gold to Great Britain. He also watched as Alice Coachman from the USA and Dorothy Tyler for Great Britain battled it out over the women's high jump. Both cleared the same height, but Alice won after doing so on fewer attempts. The Olympics gave me the love of all sports, he said. That was the kind of event you just don't forget. Though I can look them up in the programme, the fact is you don't really forget them. The retired chartered accountant Viv only applied this year for the final day of the athletics, but missed out on tickets. Luckily, however, he was able to attend the London Games on the first Sunday, taking in the table tennis with his grandson and basketball with his son. It was very impressive, he added. I don't think I thought we were going to get the Olympics back in my lifetime. I have two to remember now. And there are photographs of Viv with his 1948 programme and entry ticket.
Art exhibition with a difference. A stunning exhibition of foot and mouth paintings was opened last Friday by Dame Mary Fagan, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. The exhibition of inspiring paintings by disabled artists from all over the world is the second Mouth and Foot Painting Artists, MFPA, exhibition at Winchester Great Hall. Among the artists who displayed their work was Richard Wood, who's 42, from Devon. Mr. Wood was left without the use of his limbs after breaking his neck in a diving accident. All the MFPA artists are disabled in some way and unable to use their hands, but through the organisation they are able to support themselves by painting with their mouths or feet. There are 120 original paintings, plus 70 prints on show, and demonstrations by the artists. In celebration of the 50th anniversary of thimidylide being taken off the market, a collection of paintings from the MFPA exhibition, which was held at the Thimidylide Society Conference in May, are on show at Winchester. These paintings are by artists who suffered birth defects as a result of the drug. Tom Yendall, who runs the MFPA gallery in Selborne, Hampshire, is responsible for putting together the exhibition. He said, "We've got 24 artists from all over the country here, and they've all done workshops." The exhibition runs until August the 13th, and with this, there is a picture of Tom Yendall, Dame Mary Fagan and Trevor Wells at the opening of the exhibition, and also another one of the artist David Cawthorne giving a demonstration of how he works, holding his paintbrush in his mouth.
MRI scanner to be replaced by year end, says Trust. Bosses confirm new £800,000 unit for RHCH. Health chiefs have confirmed that an MRI scanner, which was destroyed in a devastating fire last year, is to be replaced. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, along with hospitals in Basingstoke and Andover, announced that a new £800,000 scanner should be installed by the end of this year. Health bosses held a public meeting last week to update residents on progress made since the Trust took over responsibility for the Winchester Hospital. The hospital lost the MRI and two CT scanners in December 2011 when a serious fire broke out. According to Hampshire Fire Services, the fire began accidentally in the roof space, possibly due to a defective heating system. But the investigation was delayed for several weeks, as a giant magnet inside the scanner could not be turned off as its fail-safe system was damaged in the fire. It was feared the magnet could have caused the building to collapse and the area had to be cordoned off. Trust Chief Executive Mary Edwards said, "Plans are underway to replace the CT and MRI scanners, and we are hoping that will be done by the end of this December." Speaking about wider issues, she went on, "We will continue to develop the quality of our services. The outpatient department at Winchester has been crying out for improvement for years, and that is happening now. By the end of the year, we hope to open the new outpatient department in Burrell Wing." David French, HHFT Chief Financial Officer, said, "The hospital had insurance on the MRI machine." He added, "The money has not been paid out to us yet, but it will, and if there is any shortfall, it will be covered by the Department of Health, so the new scanner is paid for." The Trust made a profit of £2.9 million last year, although individually, Winchester Hospital made a loss of £0.7 million for the year. However, this was only slightly more than the £0.6 million predicted by the Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare Trust that previously ran the hospital. Mr. French said, "The Winchester organisation planned to be profitable in the last financial quarter of the year, to almost break even. But it was a challenging assumption. But we are moving forward now and have drawn a line under the past." And the article is illustrated by a photograph of the sad remains of the building with the caption, "Flashback. The charred remains of the building which housed the MRI scanner at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester."
And this feature is entitled, "My Son Helped Me Beat Cancer." When Lisa Ayres was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 28, her first thoughts were for her son, Harry. Would she see him grow up and share experiences parents normally take for granted? But Lisa, who is now 29, and four-year-old Harry faced the ordeal together, including both having their heads shaved when Lisa started to lose her hair due to the treatment. In her darkest hour, Lisa, a single parent, was so tired she struggled to carry out the simplest task. But the young mum from Bishop's Waltham battled on, and she recently celebrated being given the all clear by completing 10 kilometres in the Cancer Research UK Race for Life in Southampton. Lisa was among more than 8,000 women at Southampton and Winchester who took part in a spectacular array of fairy wings, feather boas and fancy dress in every shade of pink. It is hoped they will raise over £500,000, and to do that, the charity is urging them to return their sponsorship money to fund vital research into 200 types of cancer. Lisa, a preschool assistant, was diagnosed with cancer in January last year after a checkup for swollen glands revealed a lump in her breast. She faced several months of chemotherapy, surgery, and radiotherapy before taking the drug Herceptin for a year. Her treatment finished very recently, and an MRI scan confirmed she was clear of cancer. Lisa said, "When I was first diagnosed, I tried to stay so positive, but I could not help thinking how I would say goodbye to my son. I wondered if I would see him growing up. The first few weeks were awful. It was like living in a nightmare. I couldn't sleep. During the day, I tried to take my mind off the fact I had cancer, but as soon as the lights went out, every worst thought went through my head. During the chemotherapy treatment, sometimes I only managed to get out of bed to get washed and feed Harry. I struggled to walk to the shops. I got so out of breath, it was like having asthma, and my legs and back would be sore and feel like they were burning. The second week was always better, but by the third I was thinking about having to go back again through the whole process again. I knew I had to stay positive. It was sometimes hard, and it was too easy to ask, why me? Losing her hair became one of the many challenges Lisa had to face. It started to fall out in clumps, and I decided to shave it off. That way I felt more in control of what was happening to me. Harry decided to have his hair shaved off too. When he went to have his hair cut, he just asked for it to be shorter and shorter until there wasn't any left. But the treatment got a lot easier, and it helped when I met two other young mums who were also being treated for breast cancer. I received amazing treatment and support from the staff on the Nick Jonas ward at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital. It has taken a long time to get my fitness level back to what it was, but I finally feel I can begin to look forward and that I have a future. Now I would like to help raise awareness. Some women have lumpy breasts which are harmless, but it is important to get anything unusual checked.
Councils cost... I beg your pardon. Councils count cost of torch relay. The Olympic Torches three-day odyssey around Hampshire last month has left councils with a bill of more than £100,000, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Hundreds of thousands of people lined routes to cheer on the torch as it travelled around the county. But the celebrations have left the councils, which organised them, with bills running into tens of thousands of pounds each. In Winchester, the City Council said the event on July the 11th, which attracted some 37,000 people onto the streets of the city and Kingsworthy, had cost it around £25,000. A spokeswoman said the money went on extra staff costs, the printing of leaflets, high visibility vests, temporary toilets and first aid crews. Southampton City Council organised a four-mile torch route through the city on July 14th, finishing at Mayflower Park for a four-hour evening stage show. The council said the cost of marketing, hiring stewards, putting up fencing and barriers, road closures, litter clearance and other expenditure totaled just over £40,000. Meanwhile, Councillor Keith Wood, leader of Winchester City Council, said it was money well spent. "I'm very happy we did it for little money compared to some other places. We did not do it on the cheap, but we did get great value and it went remarkably smoothly."
Don't build council homes on our green. Abbots Barton proposals criticised. Plans to build the first new council homes in Winchester in a generation have been earmarked for the wrong spot, according to some residents. 60 new homes are being proposed for several sites in Abbots Barton, including a grassy area off Dyson Drive, land off Chandler Road, and three garage blocks, as previously reported in the Hampshire Chronicle. Penelope Rose, 74, of Dyson Drive, said, "I won't be too pleased about it, but I think it's inevitable. But we will miss the grass area because children play there." A resident of Francis Gardens, who asked not to be named, said, "I just feel that every little bit of land is being built on, and already it's getting so congested round here. I think the facilities are being overstretched. We only just managed to get our son into St Bede Primary School." Another resident who lives directly opposite the proposed site, and who also asked not to be named, said, "I just don't think it's a suitable site. It will house families and young people next to the retirement home. We're not opposed to the houses, it's just selecting the right area. The plans are part of a wider council initiative to build 300 new homes over 10 years. If given the go-ahead, the homes at Abbots Barton, itself a former council estate, would be the first new council houses built in the city for 25 years. Last week, Liberal Democrat councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "It's an interesting idea. We are supporters of new council houses for the people of Winchester." Meanwhile, other residents expressed mixed feelings on the proposed development, including Ben Akers. The 34-year-old student who lives in Dyson Drive said, "I'd sooner have the bit of green there, to be honest. But we do know that there is a shortage of houses." The Abbots Barton proposals will be discussed by a housing committee on September the 18th. And the item is illustrated by a photograph showing residents opposed to propose new council houses on green space in Dyson Drive, Abbots Barton, gathering in protest.
MPs' mixed feelings on boundaries. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury says he has mixed feelings about the decision to drop the proposed boundary changes. The national spat between Conservatives and Liberal Democrats in the coalition has led to the collapse of plans to revamp the number of constituencies. The review would probably have seen the Meon Valley constituency, created for the 2010 general election, broken up and incorporated into neighbouring seats. Mr. Hollingbury said, "Despite my seat being one of those likely to go, I was always a supporter of the Prime Minister's decision to lower the number of MPs in Parliament. So frankly, I do not understand the logic of the Liberal Democrats' decision. That now means Parliament will cost more. It's also difficult to understand because these boundary changes were actually one side of a deal within the coalition that had the referendum on the alternative vote on the other side. That was delivered. The boundary changes never had anything to do with Lords reform. In this coalition, just like every other, there are always agreements and disagreements, give and take, so I'm a little bemused. However, Mr. Hollingbury added he would be delighted to carry on representing his constituents in the Meon Valley if given the opportunity again."
A Winchester charity gave the Bishop of Winchester a guided tour of its facilities. The visit by the Right Reverend Tim Dakin coincided with the recent appointment of Chris Robinson as Chief Executive of Naomi House Children's Hospice. The Bishop was accompanied on the tour by Naomi House Chairman Professor Khalid Aziz. Mr. Robinson said, "It was a pleasure to launch my tenure at Naomi House by welcoming a well-known dignitary such as the Bishop of Winchester. I was pleased to hear how highly regarded Naomi House and Jack's Place are in the local community and within the Diocese of Winchester." It was the Right Reverend Dakin's first visit to the hospice for children with life-limiting conditions, and he follows in the footsteps of his predecessor, the Right Reverend Michael Scott Joint, who was a keen supporter of the Sutton Scotney-based charity.
Summer crackdown on antisocial behaviour reaps rewards. The war is being won on antisocial behaviour during the summer, according to new figures. Hampshire police say the number of incidents across the region has dropped by 6.14% compared to the same period last year. Reports of noise nuisance have decreased by 14%, and incidents of street drinking have plummeted by more than 44%. Officers put the decrease down to this year's Summer Antisocial Behaviour Campaign, which started at the beginning of June and has seen teams target antisocial behaviour hotspots and visit schools and youth clubs ahead of the holidays. But the police have also reported an increase in one aspect of antisocial behaviour, with the number of vehicle-related nuisance incidents rising by 4.99%, as 72 more incidents were recorded. Overall, total recorded incidents of antisocial behaviour in June and July 2011 topped 15,260, whereas this year they are down to 14,325 for the same 2 months. Campaign leader Inspector Mark Hull said, "Tackling antisocial behaviour, ASB, is a year-round priority for Hampshire Constabulary. Parents are also being urged to keep an eye on where their children are during the summer holidays, to avoid them becoming involved in any antisocial behaviour, and residents are urged to report any incidents to 101 so that officers can target problem areas. The campaign will run until September."
Turbo Boost for Motoring Charity. A new charity providing fun motoring for disabled people, combined with car workshop training for unemployed youngsters, has been given a huge turbo-style boost by the Prince's Trust. Power Slide Rides at Swanmore has been donated a portable building with decked area and wheelchair ramp, which can be used as a workshop, classroom or clubhouse. It would have cost at least £9,000 at commercial rates, but the charity has secured it for little more than £1,000, with all the funding met by volunteers' efforts and support from South Coast Building Supplies and Asda at Chandler's Ford. The new building was opened by Becky Higginbottom, 26, a member of the Fareham-based disability charity KIDS. Power Slide Rides, launched by Mark Angelis and his wife Karen just 6 months ago, builds Volkswagen Beetle-based sandrail buggies, which have proved a hit, giving rides to disabled people. Mr. Angelis said, "We deliberately wanted the new unit to be multi-purpose, so that it can be used by local youth clubs. Swanmore Technical College has expressed an interest in the workshop environment. Completing the transformation will be a purpose-built unit with disabled toilet and changing area."
Big swim for Jacob. Jellyfish, rough seas, and a lack of support boats were just some of the obstacles overcome by Winchester man Matthew Johnston as he swam the English Channel. Matthew, a 47-year-old IT consultant of Long Park, Crawley, was raising funds for his nephew, who suffers from a rare neurological condition. Matthew said it was very much touch and go, as there was a gale force 8 the day before, and it usually takes the sea 24 hours to settle down. Last month, he swam the channel as part of a three-man relay in support of Jacob Willis, who's 20 from Woking. He was joined by 54-year-old Rory Fitzgerald of Timsbury and Jim Boulder, who's 52 from Guildford. Jacob was left paralysed and in intensive care after developing Guillain-Barre syndrome, GBS, where the immune system mistakenly attacks the nervous system. Crossing from Dover to northern France, the relay team completed their challenge in 11 hours, 33 minutes. Matthew added, "I wanted to do something to raise money for Jacob. The donations gave me the extra motivation to succeed. Jacob is 90% back to where he was before he contracted GBS, but he still has numbness in his feet. So far, Matthew has raised £2,500 for the GBS support group, which helps sufferers and their families. To help him reach his target of £3,000, visit justgiving.com/Matthew Channel Swim with capital M, capital C and S. And there's a picture of Matthew, Jim and Rory just before they did their swim.
Dame Kelly adds to museum exhibits. A piece of Olympic history is to go on display in Winchester for the first time. Athletics legend Dame Kelly Holmes has lent her tracksuit, which she wore when collecting two gold medals at the Athens Olympics in 2004, to the Adjutant General's Corps Museum in Peninsula Barracks. Curator Ian Bailey said, "This is particularly poignant this year, as 2012 represents the 20th anniversary of the formation of the Adjutant General's Corps in which Dame Kelly served." Mr. Bailey contacted Dame Kelly to request some Olympic memorabilia to display during the London 2012 Olympics and Paralympic Games. He said he was stunned when the double gold medalist lent the iconic item. "I never imagined it would be the tracksuit in which she received her two gold medals for winning the 800 and 1500 metre races," he said. Dame Kelly has enjoyed links with Hampshire since serving at Marchwood Military Port near Southampton, during which time she began training with the Southampton Athletic Club.
And we've had a news item about swimming the Channel, and here's one about swimming the Solent. Helen Littlejohn, Gold and Silver Duke of Edinburgh's Award Coordinator at Peter Simmons College, has swum the Solent and raised over £1,200 for Oxfam. It took her 2 hours 15 minutes to complete and 6 months to organise, with much liaison with the Coast Guard and authorities in Southampton. With 5 other swimmers and an entourage of safety vessels, 3 boats and 8 kayakers, they swam from Ryde Flats to Southsea. Swimming with Helen were Steve Harris, BBC Radio Solent's Drive Time presenter, Richard Coughlan, a DOE helper at the college, Greg Holmes, Mags Brennan, and Heather Lunt, a university researcher in cold water immersion. Helen said, "The day dawned calm and still, fabulous considering all the weather we've been experiencing lately, and perfect for our venture. It was like a mill pond, with no swell apart from the ferries and hovercraft. It was amazing swimming in the middle of the channel, looking up at the blue sky, so close to the ferries." You can still donate via www.justgiving.com/Helen Littlejohn.
Living his dream. Chandler's Ford has produced a future dance star after a pupil from Sherborne House School was accepted into one of the world's foremost ballet schools. Louis Scrivener, 11, of Bassett Green, has been selected to board full-time at the Royal Ballet School. He said, "When I'm older, I'd like to be a professional dancer, as I love the feeling of being on stage and bringing the joy I get from dance to others. I'm really excited, but will miss my friends at Sherborne House." His passion for ballet was born after watching Swan Lake and Romeo and Juliet with his family one Christmas. His mother, Soyara Scrivener, later enrolled him at the Sally Johnson Academy of Dance, Southampton, where he trained in ballet, tap, modern and jazz dance. Sherborne House head, Heather Hobson Hill, said, "This is an absolutely outstanding achievement. To see where he is today is incredible, and we look forward to following his exciting career."
The heading for this item is London 2012. A Winchester pub has raised more than £400 for a British Paralympic team. The Wickham Arms in Kingsgate Street hosted a champagne reception for the British goalball team, as two of its members are from Chandler's Ford. Adam and David Nodd, students at Peter Simmons College and Thorndon School respectively, have been selected for the final squad for this year's Paralympic Games. They are joined by John Devins, who carried the torch through Kingsworthy last month at the pub. John Howard, manager of the pub, said, "It was really fantastic, and we were really pleased to have the real torch here as well. It was part of Winchester Rotary's efforts to support the team, with a charity raffle also planned for September. And the item is illustrated by a picture of the front door of the Wickham Arms with the various people involved standing outside holding the Olympic torch."
Band boosts morale. A Winchester military band has helped to both boost the morale of troops working on Olympic security duties and entertain crowds watching the tennis. The band of the Adjutant General's Corps rock group, Row 8, performed to troops living at temporary accommodation at Hainault, Essex, before its 15-strong dance band entertained spectators at Wimbledon last Wednesday and Thursday. Said Director of Music, Captain Guy Booth, "We've had two very different roles for the Olympics and have provided two different groups playing very different styles of music. But all our performances are as important as each other, and it's a great experience for our musicians to be involved in the Olympics. For the troops, we played the music that's on their iPods to entertain them at the end of the working day, while it was a mix of traditional and more modern dance band music for the tennis. Hainault Camp is providing accommodation for 3,500 troops working on security duties at sports venues at the Olympic Park and the Excel Arena. The band, based at Worthy Down, Winchester, will return to Hainault during the Paralympics to perform for soldiers, as well as entertaining troops on board HMS Ocean. It is heading out to Afghanistan in November to entertain troops over the Christmas and New Year period."
Black belts handed out to Fantastic Five. Five karate students are celebrating after earning black belts. Elliot Brown, Callum McKenzie Chambers, Daniel Rake, Mark Diaper, and Molly Fawkes from Hedge End Karate Club were awarded the high grading. Their instructor, Sensei Alan Woodhouse, said, "Things like this are hard to achieve without dedication. The students' strength, stamina, and ability were tested, pushing each and every one of them to the limit." And there's a picture of all of them in their karate costumes, ready to start earning their black belt.
Bus drivers' strikes averted. Two one-day strikes by bus drivers in the Winchester area have been called off, according to managers at Operators Stagecoach. The RMT union had called for two weekend strikes last Saturday and Sunday, and again this weekend. Stagecoach South Managing Director Andrew Dyer said the action had been dropped following discussions with local union representatives. Mr. Dyer said, I have been given assurances that our revised pay offer has been accepted following the talks, and we will be able to run our network of services based from Winchester as usual, with support of our 96-driver team. The RMT was unavailable for comment. It is thought the dispute centred on a below-inflation pay offer of 1.5% for both 2012 and 2013.
Aussie Olympics team in action. The Australian Paralympic equine team, which is preparing for the Games by staying at Sparsholt College, is to give visitors a sneak preview of their skills at a demonstration later this month. The Australians are among the most accomplished horse-riding nations, having won 8 Paralympic medals, including 2 golds, since the event was introduced in 1996. To see the team in action at the college, at the college's Equine Centre on Friday, August the 17th, call 01962 797 373. Tickets cost £15 each and include a barbecue in the evening. The demonstration will take place from 6 p.m. onwards.
Thank you, and that concludes our Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week, and I think we may have detected a little Olympic fever in there. If you have any problems, I will say again, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's Lynn on 01962 862 826. And we thank our editors Irene Dowding and Bill Argles. Thanks too to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you too to our readers for this week, to Claire Porter.
Bye.
To Robin Freeman.
Goodbye.
And to Jerry Tuff.
Bye.
And from me, Ros Lydiard, goodbye. And all of us here, hope you have a good week. And after all the excitement of the Olympic Games, it will certainly seem to be a quieter time. And finally, a reminder, please. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. And thank you very much.